Session number 23346. Let's start. Oh God, I've forgotten. Harry Arthur Glanville, reels 3 and 4. Left channel informant mic only, right channel interviewers mic only.
Mr. Glanfield, reel 3. We're talking about your time at Llandudno with the Coastal Artillery OFTU, and you were talking about the gun drill on the 6-inch guns. Now, did you actually proceed to firing the guns, and what was it like when they fired? Because they're quite a large gun, aren't they?
Yes, the gun was very large, actually, from what I had seen before, and it was quite an ordeal there the first day of the live firing, so that you did hear a loud bang, and if you were near the gun, you probably jumped the first time.
Did you have any hearing protection?
I can't remember. We probably were given some cotton wool to put in our ears, but nothing for more than that.
And any other guns you were introduced to then, or was it the searchlights next?
I don't remember any other gun we actually fired at all.
Now, what about the searchlights? You mentioned you had searchlight training. Could you tell us about that? Which searchlight was it, and what was the training?
I don't remember much about it, except we were shown these searchlights and shown how they went, but we didn't operate them. We didn't operate them at all, but we were shown what they were and how they could perform.
Was it impressive, or...?
We were just aware of it, because obviously they need searchlights for night work, for engaging an enemy, not for anti-aircraft. It was for coast artillery.
Now, anything else you were learning? Because you seem to have been there quite a while. The photographs you've just seen were from March, so you were there, three or 4 months at least.
Well, I can't remember actual detail. We were certainly individually asked a lot of questions and told a lot of things. The training was far more intense there, and there were two officers. There was a major and a captain, and several NCOs who gave us quite a lot of training, discipline and so on. And it wasn't so much all the time about the gunnery, about behaviour of officers and so on.
Well, tell us about that. So they were inculcating you in the sort of way an officer was expected to behave.
Yes, they did that because we were very varied. I remember one of the cadets, I mean, going from one extreme, his name was, I think it was his true name, he was called Prince Isolani. Presumably he was Italian. I didn't have anything to do with him, but you had... from one extreme in the class to the other extreme, people who came from very ordinary backgrounds.
Now, how were you expected? What were the basic principles of behaviour and expected of an officer that they were trying to get through to you?
I don't remember actually what really happened about that. I don't remember very much detail about that.
So what else do you remember about that course?
Oh, I remember it was very pleasant. We stayed in an hotel specially for these 30 people, and
so you were in hotel billets.
Oh yes, we were well treated. We were treated already as officers. And when the time came, I think whether it was because they needed them quickly, but I think the whole course passed the course.
Was there a sort of final examination, or was it just any practical or theoretical examinations?
That's right. They weren't too exacting. If there'd been somebody who was particularly backward, they might have given extra training or paid more attention to them.
Do you remember the date of your commission then, or?
Well, it was, as far as I remember, it was early in April.
1941.
1941, yes, and we were kitted out by Austin Reed there.
Tell me about the kitting out process. Were you given the grant, and did the grant cover what you bought? What did you have to buy?
Well, the representative from Austin Reed fitted and took the orders for the uniforms, for the dress uniform and so on. And they gave us, I think it was so many weeks till we got the grant, till it was paid, till we had to pay it. We signed a standing order, and we were told to follow out the procedure, which was to open an account with Lloyds Bank. I think it was in Cox and Kings in London, or a similar branch, where all our pay would go, and the standing order for Austin Reed would be deducted from that account. So it was automatic.
Now, so what happened then? You were commissioned for April-ish, 41, then what?
Well, we were all told where we were to proceed, and we're given a warrant to get there, and that was I knew I was commissioned, and I wore the uniform, and I made the journey there.
Now, which unit were you going to, and where was it?
I was to go to, I think I've got the correct name, 549 Coast Regiment, RA.
Where were they?
They were the headquarters was Dover, the Citadel Dover.
And that's where you went?
No, I went to one of the batteries. The batteries extended from Margate to Dover, and I was sent to North Foreland Battery, which was just north of Broadstairs.
North Foreland?
North Foreland.
And which battery was it? Do you know the number?
I don't remember the actual number of it.
And what were your first impressions of the battery when you arrive as a young officer? You've got to fit in. How were you received by?
Well, my first impression was that was of the officers, because the officers were nearly. Well, they were twice as old as me. The officers were from the First World War, and I was half their age.
How did you get on with them? I mean, that's a big age difference.
Well, as it happens, I was the youngest officer in the regiment of about 25 officers in the whole regiment, and naturally, I was given any job that required training of troops and anything physical, any physical activity. So I enjoyed myself there because I had no problems. And the other two officers at this particular unit, they were not terribly interested in the gunnery or the fighting side of the war. They were only there as a stopgap, just to be there and not get into any problems of any sort.
Now, can you describe the setup of the North Foreland Battery? I mean, what, yes. Describe it.
Yes, the battery was approximately 100 men. That particular unit, I think, was 4-inch. 4-inch coast artillery gun with searchlights, and It was surrounded by barbed wire and guarded, of course, by the unit itself. There was no other unit near it. We had very limited transport.
What was the composition of the unit? How many men and, you know, how was it?
It was, well, out of the 100 men, it was gun shifts of, I think, three gun shifts for each gun. There were two guns and the searchlight shift as well. So they were on duty, off duty, or in training all the time. And that that actually took up 100 men, approximately. They were all artillery. There was no other unit there.
Now, how did you get on with the men? I mean, this is your first time as an officer. How did you get on with the men and the NCOs, especially NCOs who might be older and more experienced than you?
I had no problem at all with anybody. I never have had in the army or in industry, really. I'm very easygoing, and providing people leave me alone, I don't cause them trouble.
So, would you make an effort to learn the names of your men, or was how close would you get to them?
I can't remember the particular names now because I went to so many different.
Oh no, I don't mean now. I mean, would you then have made the effort?
Oh yes,
to learn them?
Yes. I would know most of the men anyway. I would know most of the men and particularly. Particularly the NCOs.
Would that include an awareness or interest in their personal circumstances, i.e. your pastoral role? I mean, would you be aware of which men were having trouble at home, that sort of thing, or were they just really soldiers to you?
No, they were all drafted men. They were all called up. Very few, probably only two or three NCOs that were in the regular army. There might have been one or two territorials, but
did you have a pastoral side? Would you be interested?
No,
in that?
No. The only thing I can remember is was I managed to get rid of two of them.
Well, why was that?
Well, I thought they were mad.
In what way?
Well, I remember their names. Gunner Baranovsky, by the name, he was obviously of some Russian or other background, and I think he was a Jew too, and he did it, he acted as if he was mad in order to get out of the army, I thought, so I managed to get rid of him and get him to the Pioneer Corps, because I didn't think he was suitable for gunnery.
Why not? What was wrong with him? What was he doing? It was.
Well, he was doing everything he could except do his work. Skiving, in other words, all the time. He was no good to the unit, and we had to get rid of him.
What about the other one you got rid of?
The other one, Gunner Diamond. I think he really was psychiatric. He wanted treatment.
And he wasn't feigning this.
Well, he did have fits a bit and so on. And I took steps to have him removed as soon as possible.
Now, what about your relationship with the bombardiers and the battery sergeant, the senior NCOs?
Yes.
Some of them must have had more experience than you, perhaps. I mean, what was your relationship like? I mean, did you make it easy for them to give you advice or to warn you when things are wrong? Or how did you cope with your NCOs?
Well, I was friendly towards them, and I didn't find that they neglected their duties at all. So I left them to it. I didn't interfere with their work. It was only later with the BSM, which he was having trouble when we were moved, when we were moved down to Dover, and we had trouble in a way with him, or the troops did. And
So then you intervened. So your opinion was that as long as they were doing their job, you left them to it?
Yes, yes.
And if they'd said that you were doing anything wrong, would you have taken their advice or taken note?
I would have accepted advice, yes.
Were you on first name terms? Probably unlikely. Or you know, or did you call them sort of...
No. They all treated me as an officer, yeah.
Now, where were you actually living at North Foreland? I mean, was the accommodation built into the gun position, or were you in...
No. We were in the houses which were immediately behind, within a matter of yards, built near the edge of the cliff, almost. And they were luxurious houses.
The owners weren't there, I presume?
Owners weren't there, so in any of those houses. Nobody lived on North Foreland.
So were the billets comfortable then? I mean,
very comfortable indeed. Yes, there was a titled person's house that the officers occupied, and generally the standard was very, very high.
So you had a room to yourself.
Oh yes, yeah.
Now, anything happened while you were at North Foreland? You got there right about April, 41. Anything happened? How long were you there?
I was there until August.
And in that period,
In that period, I trained troops on various infantry things, a spigot mortar, the...
Now, how did you know about them? When had you been trained in the spigot mortar?
I think I went on a course. I went on several courses when I was there, but I think I went on a special course because I was very young for some of the other compared to some of the other officers, and they thought they'd make use of me.
So, tell us a bit about the spigot mortar. It's not, you know, it's not. Tell us.
Yes. Well, it was just a similar to look at like a Bren gun on a stand, and you just had to load it and aim it at a tank and fire it within a reasonable range of, well, perhaps 50 to 100 yards, I thought.
What did you think of it as a weapon?
Well, I didn't know any other. I hadn't been introduced to any other weapon, so I couldn't really compare it, but I realised that that was about the only weapon that would apply to the static unit that occupied the place we were in.
Any other weapons you were training the men in? I mean, did they get... I don't know whether they had Stens in 41?
Well, we did have... in the unit, other weapons, we had Lewis guns and Bren guns.
Tell us about the Lewis and the Bren.
I don't remember much about the Lewis gun, but the Bren gun in particular, we had two sandbag positions in the battery for anti-aircraft, and that was the equipment we had. No real equipment for dealing with aircraft, but we did have a raid.
Before we get into the raid, it tells about, I mean, what training had you or the men had in using the Bren gun as anti-aircraft?
I recall that I did have a bit of infantry training on a special course, and presumably because I was young enough to do this sort of thing. And when I came back, of course, I was told to train various other people in that unit and nearby units in the artillery, Coast Artillery.
Now, tell me about the raid.
It happened on a Sunday. I think it was about Easter time, around about April. No, it was a bit later. It may have been Whitsuntide.
May,
yes. It was a Sunday, I remember, and lunchtime, there was the lookouts on the guns, on the anti-aircraft positions, raised the alarm. And I was on duty, of course. And two Dorniers were circling round. They dropped a few bombs on Broadstairs, not on us. And there didn't seem to be any anti-aircraft fire. But when they came fairly near overhead, although I realised that we hadn't any real weapons, I ordered the gunners to open fire, just as morale busters.
As a gesture. Were they a bit out of range from the, for the Bren? Or?
They could have hit them, but they couldn't have done any real damage, I don't think. It was only a morale buster, because otherwise we didn't get no action and no good telling everybody afterwards. Somebody came to ask the questions, and I didn't do anything.
That was the only air raid
that I remember. Yes.
Any use of the guns in their coastal role? I mean, any alarms or alert?
There was no enemy activity whatsoever.
How did you get on with these older officers? Now, you in a sense were quite old for a young officer. You know, you were because you were just slightly older than the average officer at the time. But these men were much older. There's still a big age gap. How did you get on with them once you'd settled in? I mean, the two you were with and the other officers as you met them. How did they treat you and behave to you?
Well, I didn't make any friends. It's true, and. But I just accepted it, and I didn't raise any query whatsoever. I just accepted my position.
It sounds like they took advantage of you.
Well, I must say these two, Captain Scowcroft and Lieutenant Lloyd, who wore First World ribbons, they used to take the opportunity in the evening, taking the only transport, and been driven to wherever they wanted to go.
But they never took you. You know, they never took
one
of them.
No.
They always went, the two of them. One of them didn't stay and you go with the other one.
Yes, I was the guinea pigger.
And they weren't particularly friendly, from what you say.
No, the Captain Scowcroft, he was horse artillery originally, and he was a bit horsey. And he was a bit rough, really. I can tell stories about him when we went down to Dover.
Okay. So the next thing would be probably the move to Dover, would it?
Yes. The battery at Dover had been there since the beginning of the war, and it had a very rough time during the winter. And it was decided that it would be relieved by another battery, who'd had better facilities. So we went down and changed with them, and we were on the breakwater at Dover.
Tell us what the gun position was like. How many guns and the setup? Was it just two still?
The same guns, two guns.
Oh, you took your guns with you?
No, yes, static guns.
Static, I thought so.
Yeah. On fixed mountings.
So you took over the two guns?
We took over the two guns and the searchlights, and the accommodation was very limited. The breakwater is cut off by the eastern arm and the western arm of Dover Harbour. It's a strip of concrete, and it had concrete billets built on it. It had the original lighthouse there. It was on the eastern arm, and it was called Knuckle Battery, K-N-U-C-K-L-E. K-E. I'm not sure how you spell it.
Knuckle as in on the fist.
Yes.
And what was the accommodation like?
Well, it was just in these wooden concrete billets, like huts, but just a one-room billet, and your sleeping mat or whatever.
Doesn't sound very comfortable.
Not at all comfortable.
And it sounds like you were cut off as well.
You were not on land. You could only reach land by a ferry.
What did you think of that?
Well, it was all right because it was the summer, but it was.
You'd gone there in August, I think you said.
Yes, it was rough in several ways. The duty officer, which was normally every third night. The three of us, and it was in the lighthouse. The lighthouse was on a metal ladder to 2 or 3 floors. I'm not sure which. The top floor was where the duty officer and the people on duty spotting any activity were. The officer was there just to give the orders, and you were there all the night.
In the lighthouse?
No, not necessarily in the lighthouse. You would do about, the officer anyway, would do about 2 hours or 3 hours looking and trying to spot any...
It was an observation post, though,
so an observation post, yes. Anything that was going on, and then you would have a rest.
Now, when you were in the lighthouse, you know, what were you using? Were you using binoculars and
Oh, I had binoculars, oh, yes.
And did you scan the horizon and the skies for aeroplane, or were you just looking for the sea?
No, you're only looking at the sea.
And did you do it in a logical fashion, or did you just... do it as it took you?
Well, you did it as it took you, and it was according to moon and cloud and the position of whether you could see, or if you couldn't see, there was no point in using your binoculars. But...
And you'd be just up there with a signaller?
Well, you had two or three staff there who assisted you, if necessary, and... the main danger, we thought, was a lookout could be captured by a small German boat that would come to capture somebody.
A raid?
A raid, in other words, a minor raid.
Was that a serious risk?
Well, we thought it was. And the people in the castle at Dover did.
So I presume you were armed then with the.
Oh yes. We were all carrying arms all the time.
The Enfields.
Well, I carried a revolver. But the troops always were armed wherever they were. Well, we were at an action station. That was the front line. As far as
you were very conscious of how close you were to it.
We're very conscious, yes.
Did anything? There wasn't a raid, I presume.
No, there wasn't a raid. There could have been.
Now, anything happened while you were there, or you know, while you were at Dover?
Well, yes. The intelligence there, which the officer concerned himself with, was the almost daily movement of the convoys. There was an eastbound convoy and a westbound convoy almost every day. Small ships, up to about 15, went half a mile to a mile in front of you in the sea. And you got a coded message, usually 12 to 15 hours before the convoy came. And you informed the people on duty, convoy expected in half an hour or whatever, and that is when the maximum alert was on, because you might have casualties. When the convoys passed, frequently, almost every time, they were shelled by the Germans from the other side.
Across the channel?
Across the channel, yes. And although I never actually saw a ship sunk, I saw some very near hits. And of course, the shelling wasn't always accurate, and shells fell near us, and shells even fell on the docks themselves.